You turned your mic on. I'm expecting you to talk.
I can't talk without my glasses on.
What?
That's how it works.
Thank you, Kim. We appreciate it.
Thank
it's
you,
Bill
Kim.
Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I've turned out to be a space cowboy like Steve Miller and his band.
That's how I describe you, as a space cowboy.
I had read that the Perseid meteor showers are going to be happening, and I look for any excuse possible to get Michelle Nichols on the air with us, director of public observing at the Adler Planetarium. Will we be able to see the Perseids? And
depends.
Do I call it that?
Yes, that is what it's called. And it depends on where you are.
I'm right here. I'm right in front of you. You can't see me.
So let me clarify. It depends on where you are when you want to actually go see them. So the Perseid meteor shower happens every year around this time, as Earth runs into the trail of debris left by a particular comet.
Mm-hmm.
And we run into this trail same time every year. So around August 11th, 12th, somewhere around there, we get the peak of the meteor shower, meaning we run into the thickest swarm of stuff. And so what happens is Earth runs into this stuff. This stuff burns up in the Earth's atmosphere. You see that as a quick streak of light in the sky. And you see it as many streaks of light in the case of a meteor shower. So the problem is, though, and this gets into your question about where to go see it, the more light pollution you have, the fewer of them you're going to see.
And I just read somewhere that this crazy LED light situation that everybody has in their yards and outside is creating more of a distraction.
It's yet to be seen what the impact of these LED lights is going to have. You may have started to notice that the light pollution glow in Chicago is taking on a slight, or in the suburbs as well, is taking on a slightly different color because these LEDs are white and a lot of the street lights have been orange.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be interesting. But yeah, as the LED prices go down, people tend to light up stuff more. So we don't know yet what that's going to do for visibility of stuff in the sky. We'll see over the next few years.
I know this is the most Bush League question you will get all day, but what is the difference? For those of us not in the business, a meteor shower and a shooting star is different because why?
That's an awesome question.
Is that a good question?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. So your typical run-of-the-mill meteor, your typical run-of-the-mill meteor that you might see randomly on some night of the year, is just this little piece of rock or metal or dust and stuff that is out there. It's about the size of a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And it's just, space is not totally empty. It's mostly empty, but it's not totally empty. And we just run into this stuff, or it runs into us. A meteor shower is specifically stuff that we run into that's from a comet. And so it could still be a little bit of rock, a little bit of ice, a little bit of dust, but it's specifically from a particular comet. And there are many meteor showers. There are many comets that we run across throughout the year.
How is it possible?
He got a smart question, and he's proud of himself.
I got a smart question. I didn't expect that to happen today, so I'm very happy. How is it possible that something that small, the speck of dust that we could see so many miles away.
Yep. How? So, yeah, it's burning up like 40 to 60 miles above your head. So
that was also a good question, wasn't it?
No, it's an awesome question.
I got two of them.
You're not actually seeing the thing itself burn up. You're seeing it go, it's going so fast. Some of these meteors are going 30,000 miles an hour, 100,000 miles an hour or more. And so this thing is going so fast. You can actually do a little demo, not in your car if you're driving. So if you're sitting at a stoplight, take your hands, rub them together real fast. You feel heat caused by friction. The friction of that thing with the Earth's atmosphere causes the air around it to heat up and glow. And so when you see that quick streak of light, you're seeing the glowing air. You're not actually seeing the bit itself burn up.
All right.
But the other cool answer to that is physics is just awesome.
Physics is awesome. Yes. Yes.
Space is freaking awesome.
Absolutely.
Is what it says. Isn't that what the billboards say
yes,
for the Adler?
Is.
I love that. So you mentioned that the Earth is getting into the orbit where we're going through this meteor shower. What prevents that space junk that the Earth is going through from coming earthward and hurting us?
Most of it is really, really tiny.
Oh,
so
okay.
For the
All right,
most
it was
part,
a dumb question.
It's not a dumb question because the sometimes stuff is out there that's bigger, as in a couple of little bits that just hit the moon not too long ago. That was big stuff. It was the size of a walnut.
These are the things that created sort of a glow,
What were you telling me about?
That's what I was telling you about this. Because we could see, I don't know if we could see it here in Chicago, but from some places on Earth, you could see this kind of a flash.
Yeah, so there are cameras that monitor the moon, and these flashes are seen on the parts of the moon where it's dark. So at that particular time, if it's a particular part of the moon, it could be a part that's facing us or facing away from us. It just needs to be dark, not facing toward the sun at that point. And so these cameras monitor the moon for these bright flashes. And so the brighter the flash, the bigger the thing, usually. And so there were a couple of little bits that hit relatively recently, and they estimate the size as the size of a walnut. That would be a relatively big meteor for us if we saw that in our night sky. The difference is the moon has no air, so there's nothing to burn that up. But why are we monitoring the moon? Why do we care? Well, because stuff does burn up in our atmosphere. Most of Earth is covered with water. We don't see a lot of this stuff that comes in. So if we monitor the moon, we get a pretty good sense of how much stuff is out there and how likely Earth is getting hit by stuff.
But why? All right, so I understand something hit it, but why a flash? What created the flash?
Heat.
It's heat.
Heat and instantaneous vaporization of this thing, because it's going so fast. Again, thousands, tens of thousands of miles an hour. This thing hits so fast, it's gonna vaporize itself, and that creates heat. And so the cameras are picking that up.
How hot is the surface of the moon?
Depends on where you are. If you're on the part of the moon facing the sun, it could be 250 degrees, 250, something like that, above zero Fahrenheit. If you are in shadow, since there's no air to move the heat around or anything, it could be 200 below. So those spacesuits that those Apollo astronauts had to wear, they're simultaneously protecting them from heat and cold.
That is so freaky and scary to me. If given the opportunity and you could go out into space, I bet you'd jump at it in a second.
In a second. And I hate flying in airplanes.
But this would be like a one-time experience.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I would totally do it. Yeah.
I would never do it.
So the airplane part, going from Chicago to the Space Center, that would bother you. But getting in the rocket to go to space, you'd be okay with.
It's just because I am very... It's a very irrational fear, and I know that.
I get it.
And I hate turbulence. Yeah.
I bet there'd be a lot of turbulence on the way to the moon. Although, if you're going so fast, I bet you wouldn't feel it.
Well, going through the Earth's atmosphere, at least down in the lower parts, there's a portion of that ride where it might get a little shaky, but after that, it'd be pretty smooth, actually.
And that's your life's goal, your work. I mean, to go out into space would be something, then you've achieved the pinnacle of your career, correct?
Yeah. But that's the other neat thing. Even if I don't ever do it, I get to show people space.
Yeah.
And I get to talk about space, and I get to live it and breathe it. And so that's almost as good for me.
Can I go back one second for the stuff that fell on the moon and then created a flash?
Yep.
Is it at all similar to... A lot of times, because of dryness in the air, you'll find yourself, or I've done this anyway, and it happens a lot in Colorado. I don't know why, but it does. I think because of the dryness of Colorado. As you go to get in bed and you pick up the sheets, there's like this electrical charge that comes through. There's this light bounce. Is it the same thing
that's
as that?
That's different. That's static electricity. So that's just buildup of static charge on your clothes, and happens here too. You rub your feet in the wintertime across the carpet, and you touch a metal doorknob, same thing.
Ouch.
And so that on the moon is literally an object vaporizing and turning from a solid thing into vapor and giving off a lot of heat. And so it's still physics, but a different part of physics.
All right, we have to take a break. Are you going to come up with some more genius questions?
Yeah, I got a bunch more genius questions, Michelle, so get ready for them.
I'm ready.
All right, that's coming up in just a little bit. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, you can call us there or text us there.
This is our outer space segment, Bill. We are asking, Bill's asking intelligent questions today.
Yeah, for a change.
Feeling a little inferior. Michelle Nichols is with us, Director of Public Observing at the Adler Planetarium. The last time we had you on was the Mars viewing. Was that what it was? I can't remember now.
Yep.
And a bunch of people came out. You said, was it more than anticipated?
Way more than I anticipated anyway, because the forecast was for cloudy weather and it was completely clear except for one little cloud that passed over Mars for less than 5 minutes. And we had about 3,000 people show up. It was amazing.
That's excellent.
It was fantastic.
Very
so
good.
Thank you to all those people who came out. It
was
great.
Any surprises that day in terms of what you saw?
The only thing that was surprising was that we got to see Mars at all, because
you didn't expect that.
Didn't expect it. All the forecasts were for cloudy.
Yeah.
And so as the day went on and it wasn't getting cloudy, it was getting clearer. And I thought, nope, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to jinx it. I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
And it cleared up. It was fantastic.
Good.
Is Mars still visible out there? Because I've been looking for it when I walk the dog, and I guess I'm seeing it. I don't know.
Yeah. So if you go out this weekend, if you want to go out and see that Perseid meteor shower, you'll also see Mars in the sky at the same time. So Mars rises a little bit before 9, a little before 8:30. So it's in the southeast sky after sunset, that bright orange thing. It'll be one of the brightest things in the sky throughout all of August. It'll be bright throughout the fall. It'll get dimmer and dimmer as the weeks go on. But, yeah, you'll still be able to see it. But the meteor shower.
What dates, yeah.
Yeah, best time for that is Saturday night into Sunday morning, midnight to 4 a.m.
This upcoming Saturday,
the 11th, the evening of the 11th into the 12th, midnight to 4 a.m. So midnight on Saturday night, Sunday morning is the best time.
Michelle, when I was a kid, we would go to Florida this time of year every year, and we would stay on the beach and we'd watch the meteor shower at night. And we would count how many of them we saw, the flashes. So one of the guys said, imagine for all the flashes we see, how many of them we don't see. Is that accurate? Is there many, many, many more that we just don't see?
Yeah, those are just the ones that are visible above your head right there.
Yeah.
Just think of how many people are seeing them all over on the dark part of the earth at that point. There are thousands and thousands and
countless.
Thousands. Yeah, and so what you'll see under an extremely dark sky is maybe 60 to 70 meteors an hour.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
In the city, don't get so excited. In the city, for city folks, I'm sorry, you may not see any. You may see one or two. It would have to be really, really bright to cut through all our light pollution. Most of them are fairly dim.
I'm in the suburbs. Should we go like to a park or something? Would that be the best way to see it or no?
You just need to go to an open space. I can't tell you officially to go to a park because most parks are closed at night.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. So you just have to find a safe, open location without a lot of light. So
And don't bring beer.
If it's your yard, it's okay.
Yeah.
Face east, look up. Don't bring a telescope. Don't bring binoculars. You don't need any of that. So just face east, look up.
You know
after
how many times
midnight.
People have said that to me?
That's good advice. You should follow their warning. Are these things going on constantly all the time and we just don't see them?
Just not as numerous as what you get for a meteor shower. A typical dark sky per hour rate is somewhere in around 5 per hour.
Yeah.
So for a good meteor shower like this one, 60 to 70, there's even a slightly better meteor shower called the Geminids in December. That one you can get even more, and so that's a good one. The problem is it's usually pretty cold.
Oh yeah, I bet.
This is a nice one because it's in the summer.
And you can go to Adler Planetarium, just the building itself, or you can go to adlerplanetarium.org. Do you still have your little program going on where you bring the telescope? What's that called
again?
Sure
do. Scopes in the City.
I like that.
Yep. My staff and my interns will be out at Thurgood Marshall Library in about an hour, actually, with Scopes in the City. So we are visiting three libraries this week. Thurgood Marshall Hall Library tomorrow and Bessie Coleman Library on Friday.
Excellent.
The whole schedule is up at adlerplanetarium.org. What can you see during the day?
Is the sun. Well, today maybe not so much. So they're bringing probably bringing our meteorites with them. So if you want to interact with a piece of Mars, the moon, and an asteroid, that's actually pretty cool. But yeah, if it's during the day and it's clear, we're looking at the sun.
Nice.
Safely.
When's the last time a meteorite hit the ground nearby where you guys got a piece of it? Wasn't it fairly recently?
So there's two answers to that. We have one on display that is from the Park Forest meteorite that hit in 2003. And so that is the one that went through the roof of the Jones house.
Oh, that's right.
Made a hole in the roof, made a hole in the floor, landing in the laundry.
Didn't hurt anybody, though.
Didn't hurt anyone. Nope.
Luckily.
Nope. It landed in the laundry in their basement, which is why they didn't find it right away, because it was covered up by all the clothes. It took them about 2 hours to figure out why they had this hole in their roof.
Excuse me for interrupting, but wasn't it like hot enough where it would have caused a fire
nope.
or smoking or anything?
No, that's the neat thing. If it's a large enough piece, it's not going to vaporize completely, and the interior part of it is still going to be ice cold. It's going to be the temperature of space.
Oh, my God.
And so as soon as it hits, it's going to cool off. So
wouldn't you have thought hot?
Yeah,
definitely hot.
Yeah, you'd think, oh, it must be flaming
mm-hmm.
and all that.
Yeah,
nope. So they got that one. But the other one that is really neat that we are searching for is there was a meteor that hit or that exploded over northern Lake Michigan, and our Project Aquarius teen-led team with our teen program staff have created a rig to go search for meteorites on the floor of Lake Michigan.
That's pretty cool.
Where these things ended up. And so we know this swarm hit because you could see it on weather radar. And then the teens and our staff built this rig. And actually it was a teen idea to go out and do this in the first place. So they're like, so what did you do the last time you picked up meteors from the floor of a lake? And the professionals are going, we've never done that mm-hmm. before. So they've been searching for them. They haven't found them yet, but they're gonna go out, I think, next week, if I'm not mistaken, and do another run to search
for it. Was this a year or so ago?
Yeah, it was February of 2017, I believe. So, yeah.
Michelle, I've saved the biggest space story for last. Patrick Stewart is returning to the role of Jean-Luc Picard. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm so excited.
It's very good, isn't it?
I'm just beside myself with glee. He's the best.
Who saw this coming?
No one saw this coming. I think...
Especially after his last role, which was the emoji of the piece of you-know-what.
Yeah.
He was the voice
movie?
Of that?
Yes, he was.
He's a very talented guy who
he's in
just,
great shape too. I saw him during this announcement. He looks so ripped.
I believe he's in his 70s. If I'm not mistaken,
is he in his 70s already?
I think. And forgive me if he's not. If he's younger, but
to the bridge.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, he's so great.
He's good.
He
so this is good.
I just sit there and listen to him all day long.
Don't you think that between Star Trek and Star Wars, so many of the people who do what you do were influenced by those two things?
Very
right?
much. Myself included.
Yeah.
I saw Star Wars in the theater when I was 4.
Yeah.
And I know my mom and dad are listening right now because I texted them and let them know. And my mom was there, and I think she'll remember, and she'll text me to remind me if I was wrong. But when the Death Star exploded, everybody cheered in the theater. And then the first Star Trek movie came out not too long after that. It wasn't critically acclaimed,
right?
But it got the franchise going again.
Yeah.
And mom got me into watching the reruns of the old series. So yeah, I'm a crossover. So I do both. I know there's a lot of people that are in one camp or the other, but
you can like both.
We totally can.
You should come to our house for New Year's Eve because my husband, with his podcast Rebel Force Radio, makes the Death Star blow up at exactly midnight.
Nice.
He has a certain counter you put it on, and it's a pretty exciting New Year.
That's the best way I could think of to celebrate New Year's Eve.
Michelle, thanks so much. It's Michelle Nichols, the Director of Public Observing at the Adler Planetarium. Always fun to talk to you. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much. Anytime.
Do me a favor and just say, great questions, Bill.
Great questions, Bill.
You owe me.
That felt good. We'll take a quick break and then close things off. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.